This is Gene Lin Yang, and you're listening to Welcome to Comics.
Welcome to Comics.
Episode 269. This week, we talk about
the Immortal Iron Fist, the last Iron Fist story.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Yes, good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
Is it 6:30 over there right now?
Yes.
Oh, good. My math was correct.
Yeah, you're 9 hours ahead.
You're very committed.
Yeah. You are hardcore for joining us all the way from the fatherland.
Yeah. It's early.
Did you get the thing I sent of Jin Yang?
Yes.
It's fucking awesome. Awesome. I'm so psyched. I cannot wait to edit tomorrow so that I can add that to this.
I didn't think to ask him because I wasn't sure if you had seen him yet. So.
Oh yeah.
I wish I had. Oh well.
Is he from San Jose?
His parents met at San Jose State University.
Aw.
I mean, at least according to Wikipedia. So who the fuck knows?
Yeah, because I know he's been at Elusive several times now, and
hijinks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He has to at least be localish. Nice. He is. I remember when I met him at Hijinks, he signed everything and sat and talked to me and talked to me about Avatar and talking about his experience writing Boxers and Saints.
Yeah, I talked to him about Boxers and Saints because I had got my stack of comics from behind the counter before I got in line to see him. Mm-hmm. And it was all superhero comics, right? Except for, Archie and Jughead. Those are in there, too.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Hey, they're having a revival.
Dude, they're so good. The Archie comics are great.
Anyway, right, let's add it to the list. After this, and then the next arc, then we'll do an Archie arc again.
Yeah.
Some more Archie? So okay.
I told him, I said, I kept meaning to pick up a copy of Boxers and Saints before I came. And he was like, oh, you read Boxers and Saints? You don't just read, superhero comics? And I was like, no way, man. He's like, I said, 100% honest when I said this to him, I said, Boxers and Saints is one of my favorite comics I've ever read. And I told him about the podcast. Of course, I didn't say the name of our podcast or anything like that.
It's okay. Anyways. I'll tweet at him and see if he recognizes our voices.
Okay.
Well, maybe at least if he remembers the interactions. It was only a couple days ago. It'll be funny.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. And I mean, it's better reinforcement. I think sometimes you go out and you meet an artist or an author, and it's not the experience you wanted. I went and I waited in line, and I took the bus out there for Nick Dragotta to sign some, Dragotta or Dragotta, I don't know which, to sign some East of West stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a little signature, and then I asked him to do a little sketch for me, and he had done a super detailed sketch for the person in front of me of one of the horsemen. And I asked him for one of Zhao Lian, the Chinese Western United States woman,
the princess.
Or? Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And so Death's Lover. I had asked him to draw a sketch of her, and he was so half-assed, and he looked so annoyed when I asked him. And I'm like, the hell, just because I didn't buy this trade paperback in front of you, it's on my pull list. I'm sorry, I bought it last week when it came out. I don't know. Sometimes you get a bad experience, and sometimes you get a really good experience.
He drew a sketch on my copy of the Volume 2 trade for East of West, and it was kind of okay. I mean, it looks cool, but it's not like the Booster and Beetle sketch I have from Dan Jurgens.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, he goes out a lot, too. Yeah, and I think it might be, I don't want to throw Nick Dragotta under the bus versus anybody else. It might just be a matter of there was a line and he didn't realize how long it was, and then he did.
Or maybe he's having a shitty day,
Yeah, who knows,
He's still a great artist.
Yeah, you know? And he still was really kind. He wasn't dickish about anything. So I mean, and sometimes you do meet people who are a little bit dickish. So it's awesome reinforcement that Jin Yang is such a great, because it makes me want to go out and it makes me want to ask other people to do this for us. Which is, I think, what I'm going to collect now. I think I'm going to ask people to sign stuff, tell them I've been doing a podcast for 5 years. Please, please, please just do an intro.
No, yeah. He was great. He was taking pictures with, like, everybody who asked for it. Mm-hmm. He was shaking hands, asking people their name, asking what kind of things they like which comics they like and stuff. He was great.
Yeah, and his go-to question so I remember awesome. Was, I was like, how far did you come to see me? I was like, that's awesome. And then he would thank people who came for, like, more than, like, 2 miles. He was like, oh, thanks, it's a long way. And I was like, just Branham in 85. It's not that far.
No, I'm not, like, this isn't to... He was easy to talk to. Because mm-hmm. I remember, like, when I met Kelly Sue DeConnick, she was super nice. But, like, yeah. I didn't really know... It was hard to get a conversation going with her. And, you know, that's partly on me, too. But with Jean, it was really easy to talk
yeah.
to
him. Yeah, I had a similar experience with Kelly Sue DeConnick. Because I had her sign a HeroClix card from Captain Marvel. And she was like, oh my god, this is the first time ever signing this. And that, like, she was trying so hard to be friendly and start an easy flowing conversation, but mm-hmm. she's an intense person.
Yeah.
She's intense. I love her writing, and I love, like, all the stuff she's intense about. I'm intense about too, but just, like, I couldn't come to your level, Kelly Sue.
Hey, but you know, I appreciate that these creators make time to meet us at all, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not obligated to do that.
Oh, yeah. So how is the Fatherland, Jen?
It is really nice here. I'm living in Bumblefuck right now. It's a small town called Icking. And
I know,
like,
Icking.
What? Really?
Yes.
It's, like, so small it doesn't even have its own grocery store. It has a gas station.
I know because I've been to Germany twice, and both times I went to Munich, and I've taken buses from Munich to other places, and for some reason, there's a bus stop near Icking, and the buses would always, I mean, always, the two times I've taken them, they've stopped near Icking, and I was like, the fuck kind of a name of town is this?
Yeah, like, it's on an S-Bahn line between Wolfratshausen, which I guess is, like, a slightly bigger town than Icking, because it has at least 3 grocery stores in Munich. But oh my god, like, so I walk the dogs and we go past these cornfields, and sometimes we have to turn around because a man comes down the street and he's walking his horse, and, like, the dogs do not like horses, so it's like, oh shit. So we fled horses twice. There's cows everywhere. I really like it though, it's so quiet. And so Germany has quiet hours.
Yeah.
Where you have to be quiet between 8 p.m. and 7 a.m., so, like, at night, which makes sense. You have to be quiet between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., and you have to be quiet all day Sunday. And it's because I guess they just, like, want to preserve their leisure time. Everything's closed on Sundays, too, but, like, you can't play piano, you can't play your music loud, you can't mow the lawn. You're not supposed to leave your car idling too long in winter. If you have a dog that's barking, you have to make it be quiet. It's weird.
I'm, like, giggling over here because you're, like, living my dream.
I know. I'm loving this. Within a week of coming here, I'm like, I want my friends to move out here so I don't have to go back ever again. I was done with San Jose. I was just fucking done by the time I left, though, and I regret having to go back to that housing market and the crowdedness. Those are the two things that just made me fed up.
Okay, so can I add you to my plan to take over a town in northern Spain?
Yeah. With the little mansion for, like...
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in on that. The other thing is there are, like I've told you, there are entire towns where there's, like, an isolated small region. The towns are dying and people are not learning the language anymore. And the government's literally like, you can have this town if you bring, like, 3 people and you all promise to learn the language. You can have the entire town because nobody's living there.
And, like, I'm down.
I can do that. As long as I have the internet, I'm fine. Internet and Amazon delivers, I'm cool.
That's all I need. Oh, yeah, that was, like, the first thing I did. I signed up for my Amazon DE account.
Yeah.
Because, I have not started learning German yet, aside from, like, the basic, you know, like, please, thank you, I'm sorry. And, like, people will ask you things, and I just stare at them blankly. And I've never had this experience before, because the only other non-English-speaking country I've traveled to is France, and I know enough French to, like, get around pretty sufficiently. Like, you know, ask directions or order food or whatever. And here I'm just like,
Yeah, and you're in the hella German part of Germany too.
Yeah.
Like
Bavaria.
I'm just saying, like, if you were in West Germany, that land has been switched back and forth between the Franks and the Germans enough times that most of them are kind of French-ish and know a little French. Mm-hmm. So your French could even serve you well in West Germany, but you're in, like, forever been German Germany.
Yeah. You know, 60% of all Germans speak English. Icking is not one of those places. But I'll learn eventually. I just need to, like, dedicate time to it.
Yeah. Hey, you guys want to talk about this week's comic?
Okay.
This week's comic.
All right. This week we read The Immortal Iron Fist, The Last Iron Fist Story. This was written by Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction and drawn by David Aja. There's a couple other supporting artists, but Aja gets the main credit. I think mostly the supporting art is coloring and, like, the flashbacky kind of stuff. Because that's a super different art style for the flashbacks. But this is the start of our Netflix, like, preview series, because this fall Netflix is going to start an Iron Fist story, it's going to start Luke Cage series, and then it's going to do Defenders, so we're doing, you know, four comics to try and get a handle on what those might feel like, who knows, or at least give you a sense of what those characters are like. And I really, God, I gotta tell you, Iron Fist for so long was just like a gritty street hero with this random backstory, and I hope that they go full cosmic, like Brubaker and Faction do here. I have this entire run, and I love it to death, and you don't really get a sense of how crazy it is until near the end, when they bring out the seven capital cities of heaven. Mm-hmm. I hope they go whole hog on that, because it is awesome stuff, and it makes the mythology super deep.
I can't imagine they'll go, like, into that in the first season.
No.
But I think that they'll definitely... I think it would be a huge mistake if they left out the mysticism and stuff. Oh, and yeah. I don't think they will.
I mean, it's one of the cooler defining parts of it. I think people would be very sad if they left it out.
But, you know, along the same lines, some people were pretty upset that they didn't use an Asian actor to play the Danny Rand character. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, we have a token Asian.
Yeah, two. Two of them. David, you're like a quarter Japanese, right?
Yeah, but for, you know,
he's mostly Mexican.
Well, no, so here's the thing. I've been kind of thinking about representation and diversity lately, and white privilege also, because it's been in the press a lot lately for the last few years, but, you know, I was listening to a Magic the Gathering podcast, specifically about the Commander format, and they had a guest on a series of two episodes. He's a Indian-American guy, and he was talking about representation in gaming, specifically because there's a new Magic the Gathering set coming out in 2 weeks called Kaladesh, and it has heavy... Indian influence in the, like, the names of the characters.
The depiction of a lot of the characters, too.
Right, so he was talking about how this guy that they had on the podcast was talking about, he talked about Kaladesh to some degree, but also more specifically about, you know, about representation and cultural appropriation versus appreciation and all that kinds of things. And so, you know, it got me thinking about my life, right? So, you know, I'm American, right? But my,
heritage?
Yeah, I was thinking about my heritage and stuff. You know, my parents divorced when I was really young, and I grew up, my mom's side of the family, I grew up closer to them, and there were more of them, because my dad's, you know, I'm the only kid on my dad's side of the family and stuff like that. So I grew up with a very Japanese influence on my life. But I don't look Japanese at all. I look, you know, we joke that I look Mexican sometimes, but the truth is I look like a white person. The vast majority of the time, I don't think anybody mistakes me for anything but white. And so, you know, I like to think that I am respectful of other people's cultures. I'm not racist or sexist or misogynistic or anything like that. But, you know, I unintentionally probably get, I get to take advantage of white privilege, or white male privilege more specifically. And so it got me thinking about, representation and that kind of thing. So getting back to Iron Fist, the comic book fan in me wants them to keep Danny Rand as he is. But at the same time, like if I look at Doctor Strange, the Doctor Strange movie coming out, they have the ancient one and played by Tilda Swinton. I love Tilda Swinton. I think she's an excellent actress. But, you know, in the comics, the ancient one is typically portrayed as Asian. And it's kind of disappointing to me that they didn't do that, partly because, you know, there are plenty of great Asian actors, but that is more true to the source material. There's lots of great, like, Asian actors. Like, the first one that came to my mind was Ken Watanabe when I was thinking about who could play the ancient one, like a master type character.
Hmm.
And, I get that Hollywood is trying to make money and they go with what they consider a bigger financial draw for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that probably Benedict Cumberbatch is enough to get people into the theaters.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think so.
And if you look back at other movies in recent years, there was a whole fiasco with the Akira movie.
Yeah.
Where the movie just went away because probably had a lot to do with the, the outcry of making a movie set in Neo Tokyo cast with all white people, you know?
And there's also, what is it? Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I can see the other side of the argument with Ghost in the Shell where people are saying, well, she's...
It's a robot, it doesn't matter.
but it does matter because if you look at the source material, she clearly... The Major has clear Asian influence. I mean, even calling it just Asian influence is doing it a disservice. I mean, yeah. It was a Japanese character created by a Japanese author and artist. Why not just use a Japanese actress? Or any other Asian actress could pull it off, probably. But I mean, look at, there's the actress who played Mako Mori in Pacific Rim. She looks like she
Rinko's
could
pull awesome.
Yeah, there's all kinds of actors out there, and as we, you know, why not just use the same race? It doesn't seem that hard, but, Yeah, anyways.
Do you have thoughts on this, Jen?
Yeah, I do. As a weird starting off point, yesterday I read really dumb tweet where I was just like, oh, my eyes rolled so far into the back of my head, they're probably still stuck there. Which is, if you're part of a heritage, but you were raised separate from it, it is cultural appropriation to try to reclaim it. And I was just like, set on fire. live in a dark room by yourself and never talk to anyone. And I get it, like, no one wants the person who suddenly gets into a culture and is like, look at this thing, this culture, it's so cool, and I'm being part of it, and then they're doing things that are disrespectful or shitty. But I think that, you know, that one boils down to, like, don't be shitty. That's, like, the golden rule, by the way. Don't be shitty. But, you know what? Another movie I want to bring up is Attack on Titan. They did live-action Attack on Titan movies. They were horrible. But aside from that, Attack on Titan, all the characters are of, like, a German heritage. They have these very German last names, or at the very least, Western European. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of fan outcry as to, like, why didn't they cast a bunch of white people? Turns out that there's actually a decent, like, scarcity of white popular actors in Japan, because it's such a homogenized society. Yeah, go. Do it. And apparently, you know, they do have white people who act, and, like, it's not that hard for them, I guess, to get roles. But, you know, they're not going to be finding major work all of the time, because most Japanese movies star Japanese people. And my point here is that sometimes it makes sense to not cast someone as the character's original race, because there is a scarcity of actors who could actually do the job. However, in America, you know, Hollywood is a place where even if what we see on screen is not diverse, the people living in that area are very diverse. There's a very, you know, rich cultural melting pot in Southern California. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there's going to be any scarcity of Asian actors. That said, I feel like it is a bit of tokenism to switch someone's race. Like, I don't like it when they whitewash characters. Like, they put, like Prince of Persia. For some reason, that comes to mind. Like, he's the Prince of Persia. Why is he so white? So, if you're going to whitewash characters, and everyone says that's bad, I think it's equally bad to make characters a race they're not for the sake of diversity. Now, if there's a genuinely good reason, like Hermione in the latest J.K. Rowling play is played by a black actress. And people love it. Because, you know what? Hermione, it doesn't really matter. She's not, like, distinctly white. But when it becomes part of the story, or if you're doing it to make, like, what's the word? There's a term when you... virtue signaling. If you're doing it for virtue signaling, you're doing it for the wrong reason. And virtue signaling is when you do something that looks good to the rest of the world so that you can get, like, applause for it, basically, and everyone looks at you and is like, oh, this person has the ethics and values that I have. Good for them.
Like a Midnighter.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that was virtue signaling so much as just, like, over-the-topness and an awkward construction of the character. But, you know, just, like, throwing people in and being like, hey, look at this Asian, is a little weird. So... And, you know, also in Kung Fu movies, I think, like, it is very common for Asian actors to get boxed into the Kung Fu role. Like, why not let them explore other roles a bit? Now, that said, I'm sure if someone wants to work in the Kung Fu movie industry, let them. Just, it bothers me when people add or change races when they could be, creating completely new content. I think I would love to see way more Asian people in comics as, like, title characters. But there's nothing wrong with making new characters. There is a vast wealth of creativity out there, and someone should do that instead of taking something that already exists and then changing it so that people like me can look at them and say, ah, you know, they made that person Asian. They must be like me, and they must be good people. That's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to speak from my faux place of authority as a longtime Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Heroes for Hire fan. All right, if you want to change Danny Rand's race, like, that's cool, but anything other than Asian. There's a reason why Danny Rand is not Asian, and this story brings up this theme with Danny Rand and his character, that by being a white person who's into Kung Fu and is part of this culture, he is the outsider. So he faces this very discrimination that his best friend faces. This is why him and Luke Cage are friends. And we get a little bit of it, like part of why Davos, who is born in Kun Lai, hates Danny Rand and his family is because he calls them tourists. Because they're not from there. It's not their people. Like, Davos is pissed because he believes Danny Rand appropriated their culture and became Iron Fist when it should have been an Asian person. And every other flashback of Iron Fist in this are of Asian people, of Asian descent, and here comes this white motherfucker crashing into Kunlun and demanding that his son be taken in and cared for. And all of a sudden, Orson Randall becomes the Iron Fist out of fuck all nowhere, and then there's white people becoming Iron Fist, and that's bullshit. And that's why Davos is pissed, because these white people are coming in. So if you're going to make him anything, don't make him Asian, because it's a core part of the Iron Fist character is that he is the person out of place. That said, I don't think he necessarily has to be white. He just has to be anything other than Asian. You can make him Indian, which is, I guess, a subset of Asian, but not, you know, the East Asian. You can make him Australian, you can make him Russian, you can make him African, you can make him Middle Eastern, you can make him anything. Anything, so long as it's just not Asian. And I'm not gonna even wade into the racial waters of, oh, hey, it's a person doing kung fu, let's make it an Asian actor. That's other race waters I don't want to wade into. But yeah, you could change Danny Rand, because the core part of Danny Rand is that he is the outsider, and that's why he pursues a friendship with Luke Cage, and why Luke Cage sees them as equals, because they're so different people. They are so different people, but they experience the same prejudices, and they're fighting against it at the same time in the same way. Likewise, Colleen Wing. If you wanted to change somebody to make them Asian, make it Colleen Wing. I mean, aside from the line of Misty Knight saying, I'd holler at that white girl, she's crazy. I mean, you could make Colleen Asian, whatever. Colleen could be anything. Fuck, Misty could probably be anything. It would kill the 70s, you know, Harlem vibe if you change Luke Cage and Misty Knight, but you could make them anything too. Well, maybe not Luke Cage. Luke Cage's story is very about the African American prejudices of Harlem in the 70s and 60s. So maybe not Luke Cage, I wouldn't change. But, I mean, this comic especially goes into it in such a great way that it's subtle and it's only brought up a couple little times about how these white people are just crashing into Kunlun and taking over this legacy. but that's what I think this comic is about, too. He gets the book and the story and all this stuff comes up, and Danny, what does Danny ask? Danny asks Orson, are you my father? are you my grandfather? Orson's like, don't be fucking stupid. Because really, that doesn't matter. The family of the Iron Fist and the heritage is passed on through them being worthy of touching the heart of the Undying Dragon. That's what makes them family. That's what makes all of them family. And it's about this heritage, this legacy that gets passed on from Iron Fist to Iron Fist. It doesn't matter what color they are. And that's what Davos, I think, fundamentally doesn't understand, and why he's a dynamic villain. Because he cannot comprehend why he is not Iron Fist. And it pisses him the fuck off. Because he thinks he deserves it, just because he's of that heritage, of that culture of Kunlun. My personal way in, and I'm not saying this because I'm the token white person on this podcast, don't make him Asian, please. it takes so much from his character. Bam, that's my soapbox.
All right.
So what did you guys think of the character of Danny Rand?
He was kind of bland here, honestly. I feel like I could have gotten a bit more. He was just kind of like a confused guy who got beat up a lot.
Yeah. That's so much. Because I think that's what Jaren thinks of him, too.
Oh, my God. So my problem with this comic is that it made me feel a little like I couldn't follow along, and that was my fault. Which, okay, so maybe it probably was in some ways, but at the same time, I feel like narrative structure and character should be easy to parse out for anyone picking up a book. And I spent this whole comic, like, reading the little blurbs at the beginning, being like, oh, okay, I thought that might have happened, but I wasn't sure. I have felt the same blurriness about Danny. Like, who is this guy? What are his values? What does he want?
Damn it.
Slam down my coffee.
Yeah, and I think the timeline as it's portrayed here is a little difficult to follow because what we see jumps all over the timeline of these two Iron Fists, of Danny and Orson. And then we get a little bit of Wendell in there, and Orson's father, it kind of comes in and out. Like, there's these four characters of these two white families that kind of come in and out at different times in a different order, and it does make it a little bit hard to follow. Especially if you're not familiar with Iron Fist, because most of Danny's story in this is pretty much unchanged. What Brubaker and Fraction added was Orson, who didn't exist before this comic. So if you were kind of familiar with Iron Fist, that stuff's all review. And you're just focusing on what's changing with Orson issue to issue and how they're incorporating this new character into the origin story for Iron Fist and how they're making this legacy. But yeah, I was reading this again. I was like, you know, if I had read this before and knew Iron Fist, I'd be fucking confused.
Yeah, I was a little completely Jon Snow while reading this. And I love the premise, though. Like, this dude knows Kung Fu. That's cool.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes in here that remind me of Neo, where he just sits there and says, like, my Kung Fu is strong.
Yes. I liked those. They were so cheesy.
And I think that's one of the better words to describe Danny, is that he's just a cheesy guy. He's like Tony Stark, but less of a fuck-up, but fucks around more. I don't know how that makes sense. He gives fewer fucks, but doesn't fuck up as much. Like, he's not an alcoholic. He does live a relatively straight, clean life. But he just doesn't care. He's got this big company and, like, whatevs. You know, I feel like Stark Industries is an integral part of how Tony views himself, and Danny just doesn't give a shit about his company. Like, it's great that it's there. It enables him to do all this cool stuff, and it helps him, but past that, he doesn't really care. That's why he has Jaren. You handle it, buddy. Go.
Mm. Oh, that's the other thing. The whole time, Randall was like, do you know how your father got his money? And Danny is like, he played the markets. And then we never actually get the answer, do we?
Yeah, I didn't. I had the same feeling, too. I couldn't figure out if we ever found out what the answer
was. I want to know. Is it dragon money? Is it kung fu money?
See, I thought, like, it was kind of... Because they were... Orson was asking that question as Danny was figuring out how to do the hypnotic fist technique thing. So I thought it was kind of implied that his dad had learned some of these techniques, because his dad trained to become Iron Fist and just said, nah, fuck it, and left. So I got the impression that his dad knew some of this, like, hypnotic stuff and just kind of played people. Give me all your money kind of a thing. Like, you know, imagine if you had Jedi mind trick powers, but you worked on Wall Street. It'd be pretty easy to make some money.
That makes sense. Okay.
I thought that's what was implied, but I could be completely out of left field.
Well, it's things like that, because I think this comic had a lot of strong implications without being direct, which is cool, but I personally just didn't get a lot of them, so...
Well, I mean, part of this is this comic, you know, these six issues are a self-contained story, but they're also definitely building up to something else, as is the case with, you know, a lot of these monthly type comics. So maybe that's part of the reason. Maybe there's more answers to come if you're committed. Okay. But I don't know. I haven't read past this.
I can loan you the next couple.
Okay.
it gets fun, but it gets more celestial.
That's fine. I like that aspect of this comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say, like, I'm not trying to diss this comic. The moment it finished, I actually excitedly got volume 2 on the Kindle. So it's not like I disliked it or anything. I was just confused for a lot of it.
Yeah. And I tried to type it out in the notes, but I realized as I was typing it out, I was like, wait, does this happen before this or the other thing? And when does Orson leave? And what about Wendell? When did he find Orson? And that's the other thing I can't figure out, is when Wendell, like, how the fuck did Wendell get way the hell out there? Because Wendell meets Orson. When Wendell saves Orson, Orson's playing that, like, Russian roulette with the three cups. One of them has poison and two of them don't. You pick one, I drink, and you pick one, you drink. And Wendell's there in the middle of fuck all nowhere and tells Orson the right answer. But I don't remember finding out how the hell Wendell got there.
I don't think we find out. They just call him White Boy.
Yeah.
And, like, leave it at that.
Yeah. So there's a couple details like that. I was typing it out. I was like, hold on. Did that happen? And I forgot. Was this in this order or that order? So, I mean, I've read this before and it was still convoluted as fuck. So don't. Not just okay. You. Not for nothing. What was your guys' favorite scenes? The crazy white girl?
Wait, actually, before we go farther down this, I think, is there a reason why Orson's last name is Randall and Danny's last name is Rand? Because if that was just a choice by the creators, I feel like that was not the best choice. Because it really makes me think that they're related.
I think when Orson takes Wendell in, Orson gives Wendell the name Orsel. I think Orson gives Wendell the last name Rand. I think.
Oh.
I think, because when Orson's dad crashes his hydraulic airship or whatever the fuck it was into Kunlun, there's like the escape pod that they come out of, and it says Randall on it, but the last three letters are knocked off, so it just says Rand. So
it's very meta.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things you were talking about, Jen. Like, it's hinting at something, but can you just tell me already?
So it's like V'ger, is what you're saying?
Yes, I think.
But less malicious?
I mean, I kind of like V'ger, because four generations later, Danny comes back and is badass. So, kind of.
All right.
Okay.
Anyways, I thought when I was reading that, I was like, man, this is like not a great name choice.
Just adds to that confusion.
But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. So?
Oh, what was my favorite scene?
Yeah. Sorry, I explained to Jen. I'm a little punchy because I've been drinking margaritas and I haven't eaten that much for dinner.
So. My favorite part was the kung fu part.
I like when he punched people with his fist.
I like when his fist was iron.
Straight up, though, you're joking, but I love the chi guns.
Yeah, that was actually pretty cool. I mean, yeah. Some guys use guns. He's the mystical punisher.
Yeah. He's the gun kata of Marvel.
Man, I love that movie, Equilibrium. Okay, sorry, we're going like on a deep tangent here.
It's okay.
What is my favorite scene? Jen, what's your favorite scene while I think about this?
Oh, God, this is weird. I really like the scene where Davos is just like, he's in a room with his crane ladies, and he's having waves of Hydra people just throw themselves at him to die. Because what?
Because he's bored.
Yeah, I know, he's bored, and he's doing it for fun. And what it actually reminded me of is, have you guys heard of Maddox? The internet guy, Maddox?
Yes! Oh my fucking god, I haven't thought about that guy since fucking high school.
Yeah, he was really popular when we were in high school. And he is one of those, like, over-the-top satirical comedy type people where he just acts like a giant raging asshole. And I think he, like, wrote a book or an article or something about the art of manliness, but it's stuff like, fight a motherfucking bear with your bare hands, you know? And I just was like, this guy is the ideal Maddox manly man. He's just standing shirtless in a room with like a little like head kerchief, and he's slaughtering mooks for no reason.
Well, he has two naked crane women with him.
Yeah, well, he has like two naked crane ladies with him. But I like that because it's like, okay, he seems like kind of a lame, weird, petty villain until now, and then you see, oh no, he's just a psychopath.
Yeah, complete psychopath.
But that scene cracked me up a little, and it also just shows how dumb Hydra is, because seriously, guys, no.
Well, this is the problem with Hydra, right? Like, the Hydra agents are
They're like worthless. They're worse than stormtroopers. But Hydra itself, because it's so massive, represents a legitimate threat. Like, Rand Corp could be taken over by Hydra, because Hydra is just so massive and has so many resources, they can do a hostile takeover of this major company for, what, $10.6 billion? Like, it's one of those, they are kind of like the Empire, in that the troops are comically bad, but what they represent is something actually terrifying. And, like, the Mechagorgon's the dumbest fucking thing.
Yeah.
Come on, Danny. Yeah. You could beat that thing. What are you doing? Dicking around.
They cut him.
But they had to show him fall, because there was a whole, like, metaphor going on there. I like metaphors. It's so early.
It's so late. Let's see. I don't know if I had a favorite scene. I have to say, I think my favorite scene is when Luke Cage picks up Iron Fist and goes and saves him, and then they're eating Chinese food. And I like the way Iron Fist. I like the way Luke busts Danny's balls, like rich white boy coming down here trying to be street. And then he's like, come on, man, I just like good chow fun. I like that dynamic, and that's part of why I think I was really excited to do this and the next week and then from then on, because we haven't done a whole lot of good buddy stuff, and these guys, they're a great duo. And then I like when it comes back to it, when Misty and Colleen show up, and Misty's like, I'm doing that to get paid. We're cool though, right? She's on the wrong side of the Civil War, but she's doing it because she's hired to do it. And at the end of the day, you know, when it really matters, she's going to be there for her friends. And I like that this dynamic, these four people are just tight friends, and there's nothing else around that. Like, nothing else matters outside of these four. And like, even when Danny goes off to fight in the tournament of the seven celestial cities, Luke is like, you want me to come along? Luke has no fucking clue what the hell is going on, right? Like, this motherfucker in a purple bandana thing shows up, and then there's a portal opens, and these mystical motherfuckers, like, it's all out of nowhere. But Luke, without hesitating, Luke Cage, you want me to come along? Like, that's awesome. That's a good bro.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, we stalled for you. What do you got?
Okay, so I was... As soon as I asked Jen to take my spot, I realized what my favorite scenes were. It's kind of a little bit of a cheat, but I really liked the various flashbacks to previous
Oh yeah,
Iron Fist, especially the Pirate Queen. She was cool, but yeah, I mean, it gives a whole new dynamic to the whole Iron Fist mythos, because now he has this past to draw on, and it kind of reminded me of Avatar a bit. You know, we get a little bit of the previous Avatars in there, but it was very cool. Those are my favorite scenes, because, you know, I don't really know that much about Iron Fist. He's one of the Marvel characters that I don't know much about, and so seeing this kind of history to him, or in regards to his character, is pretty cool.
I do like the way it functions in the story, because all of the ones you see, I mean, like I was saying earlier when we were talking about, you know, casting different characters and the cultural appropriation and should Danny Rand be white, that conversation before, I like that those little flashbacks, you think they're just kind of fun stuff, and then on the surface level there's, oh, well, you know, she moved the chi into the arrows and it was like bolts from heaven, so I'm going to put them in my fucking guns, yeah! Like, there's that level, but then there's the other level where, oh, wait, actually... Davos, I mean, is a crazy fucking psychopath. But part of his complaint is something that I do think resonates with a lot of people. I mean, he talks about how he deserves, he's the son of the guy who mentored Danny Rand. He was born in Kunlun. He's one of the Celestials, and he gave that up so that he could try to become the Iron Fist. And he thought nothing would stop in his way. He's been a fantastic fighter, and in his head, he's one of them. He's one of these people from Kunlun. There's no reason that Davos should not become Iron Fist, especially over these white motherfuckers. and these flashbacks kind of seem to back him up a little bit. All of these people are also of that culture, or at least ancillary to that culture, and they're not complete outsiders. Davos calls them tourists. They're not completely out of nowhere. So I like that, you know, there's that surface just, oh, hey, they're cool, and the arrows and the bullets, but there's also that level of where it matters and shows you kind of the heritage and how you can look at it through either lens, and the right way and probably the wrong way to view it.
For sure.
Because when the Iron Fist stuff got cast, I saw all this shit and people talking, and I'm like, if anyone fucking ever even read an Iron Fist comic? Everybody complained on the internet over Headline, but have any of you actually read any of this?
Andy, that's
people gatekeeping. Complain over anything.
Yeah,
don't be a gatekeeper, Andy.
I'm not gatekeeping. I'm just saying.
I know. I'm just kidding. I was reading. I found r/gatekeeping yesterday. So.
That's oh God.
Why. Oh, that's got to be a good one.
It's making fun of gatekeepers, actually.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought it was like dedicated to doing it.
No. It's making fun of them.
There probably is a subreddit like that of actual gatekeepers. Called something else, people though. All right. So what else you guys got to talk about with this?
What do you guys think about the art?
Ooh, yeah.
Those crane ladies, their art is fucking awesome.
Yeah, they looked pretty badass. And by that I mean pretty and badass.
Yeah.
Bow chicka bow wow.
But yeah, they were just like super cool. I was like, oh, kung fu ladies with swords. And then they turned into cranes. And I was like, this is really cool.
And I love the effect in the art of how you can tell how quickly they transform, because one frame they're there, and the next frame it's just their empty clothes, and then the third frame is the clothes fall. Like, the transformation was just instantaneous. They just became that crane. That was cool. That's a neat effect that you don't see that much.
Yeah, that's a really good way to do it.
Yeah, gives you a good sense of that speed. Oh, and then I love the way that they talk about... the way they talk about chi and the flow of energy, and Orson blows Danny's mind. Like, you think that the chi flows from the dragon to you, but really you flow into the dragon, and you just need to jump into that dragon's chi. Like, what the fuck does that even mean? But then he gets that realization when he fights Davos and sees Davos literally absorbing the crane women, and to get their chi onto him. Like, oh. That's a perversion. I see it now. So that's what I've been doing, and I need to do the other thing. Got it.
So did Danny, this is a little bit, I just want to know about Iron Fist backstory. Did he, like, leave the, did he, like, do a Luke Skywalker and leave training too soon?
No.
Or, so he completed his training.
Yes.
Before he left Kunlun.
The reason he doesn't know things is because the masters of Kunlun didn't want to tell him.
Oh, okay.
Because Orson is right. At the end of the day, you are trained to be a weapon, and the sole purpose of your training is to become more badass so that you can fight in this tournament for them. And there's a tournament for reasons, and it matters, and all this kind of stuff, but the reality is the masters, because these white people are outsiders and don't know the price of this legacy... they were afraid that if they told Danny, he would do what Wendell did and fucking leave. Like, Wendell got through all this training, and Wendell defeated Davos. Well, didn't defeat Davos. Wendell earned the right to become Iron Fist over Davos, and Wendell was like, actually, fuck that, and left. and so they didn't tell Danny. They hid it from Danny so that Danny would become Iron Fist and would be ready in time for the tournament.
See.
So okay. That's the reason he doesn't know the legacy when Orson does, because they told Orson, and Orson was okay with it, except then he got PTSD and was like, actually, no, fuck this. But Dan, they selectively withheld the information from Danny. But he was fully trained. They did train him as much as they trained everyone else, kind of.
Okay, cool. I was curious.
Yeah.
One comment about the art. All these white people look the same. No, Orson and Danny looked too much alike, and I had a lot of trouble, especially when they were in uniform. They have a mask, so that's a little more reasonable, but just when they're, like, talking without their masks, sometimes I was like, wait, who's who?
White guy with 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, especially after Danny gets beat up, you can't really tell the difference between, like, early beard and scratch marks sometimes.
Ah, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think that they could have done a bit more to differentiate the two, but maybe they did want to draw on the similarities. I will have to read more to find out.
Yeah, I was looking out for the shoulder holsters whenever they were in uniform. I was like, who's got the guns? Because that one's Orson.
That is a good way to think about it.
I did like the way it focused in on the point of contact when he uses the chi and when he hits certain points. Like circles it in red and shades it out. It's like, oh, that's he's doing something extra kung fu-y. It's nice because it draws your attention to a point of impact that is significant. Like, not just showing, oh, he landed a punch, but oh, he landed that, which is awesome. He straight up stabbed the guy in the throat, collapsed that trachea.
That was nasty.
Yes.
Isn't that Orson's trachea?
Wasn't it? Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Or Orson.
He did it to a Hydra Mook earlier, too. It's just like, he's the trachea stabber. That should be his superhero name.
I'm glad you're bringing back Mook, Jen.
It's a beautiful word.
I got nothing.
Why don't we rate this?
Let's rate this.
Okay.
Let's do it. David, you go first.
You know, I really like this comic. It's hard for me to, like, rate it against other Iron Fist stuff because I haven't really read any other Iron Fist stuff. But that's not what we're doing, so I'm going to try to rate it on its own. I'm going to give it a 4. Yeah, I give it a 4.
Hi.
I liked it. It was an enjoyable read. I read it in one sitting. It's you know, it's a cool story. I'm glad that it's not actually the last Iron Fist story. Do you know why it's called that, Andy?
No.
All right.
Oh my god, I had a really... Sorry, I just have to share this really stupid moment. I was reading this last night, and I was tired. And I had this, like, thought where I just, like... My eyes popped open, and I was like, what if by last Iron Fist... They mean previous Iron Fist. I was just like, oh, God, I need to go to bed.
That's literally what I was just going to make a joke about.
But I caught it seriously. I was like, oh, no.
I mean, maybe it is.
Seriously be that?
Could be.
It better not be. It's not allowed.
If it is, then you're out. Fuck this.
Yeah. Write an angry letter.
I'll go next. I'm going to give this, I'm trying to be objective, because I have read some other Iron Fist, and I've read some of the Claremont Iron Fist, and I do think this is better. There's a reason we read this, because this is considered the definitive Iron Fist run, and it's hella good. This is good, but guys, it gets so good. It gets so good. When you go to the other seven cities, and there's the tournament, and it gets... Like, you go deep down the mythological, celestial city rabbit hole, and it's so good.
Sounds awesome.
But this trade, I'm like going between a 3.5 and a 4, because the storytelling does get convoluted. It does kind of bug me how you jump around from point to point in the timeline of these four white people.
Like, what if they were Asian, Andy? Would that be better?
Yeah, then I'd be able to keep better track. No, it's just the way for me to differentiate them. These four generations, because I can't say the four generations of Iron Fist because they didn't all. I mean, Orson's father, of course, didn't, and Wendell never did either. But you get a really fractured sense of this legacy when you read this, and you kind of have to sit and digest it and think about it and try to like draw the timeline. And when I try to draw the timeline, I'm missing stuff. And I feel like that's what happens when you read this. It's kind of neat, and you get a sense of something more going on, but you're missing pieces. And those missing pieces, the missing pieces for the celestial stuff is cool. The missing pieces for, like, the basic timeline of when the fuck shit happened, that's annoying. Like, Randall and Rand, and how did he get his money again? It's implied here and kind of an implication there, but can you just tell me? Because it's not really the interesting part of why I'm reading this. But I'm going to end up giving it a 4 because I know it gets great. And I know in the end most of that bullshit doesn't really matter too much. But just this trade on its own and thinking about it and reading this trade on its own, that is kind of annoying. So cut that shit out, Ed. Don't do that next time. Ed Brubaker.
And Matt.
And Matt. You hear me, Matt? I gotta stop drinking during this show. What's your rating, Jen?
You know, I'm gonna give it a 3.5. And although I did have problems with getting a good grasp on the characters and the timeline, it had enough momentum that I immediately bought the next one. So I think that's a really good sign.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they have set up a good story here. And, I always complain, oh, first trades are too expository. Well, what the fuck do I want, right? Like, you need an exposition. So it is an unfair criticism, and I understand that. I don't know, like, I think that if I do not keep reading now, it will fade from my memory, and I'll be like Iron Fist 2 a year from now. But if I keep reading, I feel like it will pay off. So this is one of those I have to see, and I need to put in the time, but I think it will be worth it.
All right.
Yep.
Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to follow this up by reading The Essential Luke Cage Power Man, Volume 2. This is a big book, guys. This is collecting issues 28 to 49. This is 21 issues of old school comics, so there's a shitload of words in here. What do you say we start halfway?
All right.
Okay.
What would that be? Let's start at 37, 38, 30. Let's do 39 to 49, see how much we get into it. Because the second half of this is when Luke Cage meets Power Man and they become bros. Yeah, so it's a big collection. We'll do what we can, and we'll just kind of have a general conversation about the character next week, because we had a great conversation about Danny and what it represents and the cultural appropriation, all that kind of stuff, before we even got into the comic here. And Luke Cage is a character out of Harlem for sure, so we're going to have some more discussion like this next week. So if you hate talking about race, don't tune in. That's all I gotta say. That's it for this week. Next week, Essential Luke Cage, Power Man Volume 2. Until then, everyone, goodbye.
Bye. Bye.